former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
New hour, same great content as we welcome you in to hour two of the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings. Adam Burke in for Michael Lombardi today. I'm Stormy Bonantoni with you. We are coming to you live from downtown Las Vegas at Circa Resort and Casino. Lots to get into with NFL free agency, headlines coming out of the National Football League, futures odds to take a look at, but also plenty of live action going on in college basketball right now as Champ Week rolls on, getting set for Selection Sunday and the NCAA tournament. And we got one game right now that's particularly ticking me off, Adam, because I have a three-team favorites morning parlay that I did here. And the Tennessee Volunteers are messing everything up right now, down 38-19 at halftime to a team in Mississippi State that was sub-500 in conference play. What are we doing?
Well, so there's a few things here. The first is, I mean, Tennessee's 7 of 34 from the floor.
Not helping.
And 2 of 18 from 3. So I actually thought about making a Tennessee second half play here, honestly, because those are really pathetic shooting numbers. They have 13 offensive rebounds in this game. They have 19 points, which is ridiculous. So they're getting some looks. They're getting some opportunities. They're just not knocking down any shots. But second half number, Tennessee minus 10.5. Little bit rich for my blood, given that they didn't play defense in that half. I mean, Mississippi State shot 61.5% from the floor, and that was 1 of 5 from three. So they were 15 of 21 on two-point shots. So Tennessee is not playing any defense in this game. They're not scoring either. That's why they're down by 19. But I will say, you can get this sometimes in these conference tournaments with the big boys where it's not like a small conference where you better win it or else you don't go to the tournament. Tennessee is in, clearly, the NCAA tournament. They're just playing for a one seed, and they may have one anyway. So not nearly as much incentive or engagement for a team like that. And we're kind of seeing, we almost saw, not that Villanova is a great team this year, but we almost saw Villanova the other night where they almost lost to DePaul outright. Yeah. It was like a minus 4,000 favorite.
Well, this is really grinding my gears. This Tennessee team was a 10.5 point favorite to start the game. They are getting 8.5 for the game at this point. The pregame total, 142.5. We're at 132.5. Again, 38-19, your score right now in Bridgestone Arena, and I'm going to punch somebody. We do have one more game that will begin this hour. I don't know if you have any interest in it, but it is one of those Big Ten quarterfinal games at 11:30 Pacific at the Target Center, Wisconsin Lane 4 against Northwestern. Total 136.5.
No, I mean, the Big Ten. So I typically tend to focus on the small conferences, which actually kind of puts me at a disadvantage at this time of the year. And then maybe something of a disadvantage in the NCAA tournament, too, because it's a lot of major conference teams. But the one thing I'll say is this, you know, I mean, both of these teams have had ups and downs throughout the course of the season. I think Northwestern has had fewer downs here of late, but also Northwestern, they're rested. They haven't played. In some respects, that's a good thing. And we have seen line moves as a result based on, you know, rest discrepancies and all that. But at the same time, I mean, Mississippi State played yesterday. Tennessee didn't. So, you know, we're seeing a blowout here. I think when you're playing in a neutral setting, I'd rather play. I know you're playing a back-to-back, but I would rather play. Wisconsin played yesterday, blew out Maryland. They were able to empty the bench, balance everything out. Because of that, I at least like Wisconsin first half in this game. I don't know who ultimately wins it, but I think Wisconsin, more familiarity with the floor, a little bit more comfortable, shook off some of those pregame jitters from playing in this conference tournament, stuff like that. I think they're able to come out and play well here in the first half. So I do like Wisconsin first half in this one.
Also, something to keep an eye on right now as time winds down. Purdue, a 7.5 point favorite against Michigan State coming in. They're up just 2 right now with under 2 minutes to play.
Yeah. So, you know, I talked about it with Tennessee earlier and Rick Barnes. Purdue's another one with Matt Painter. I mean, you know, we know that they lost to Fairleigh Dickinson in the tournament, and Matt Painter's had some very good teams, not probably as talented as the Rick Barnes teams, but Rick Barnes and Matt Painter just aren't good at this time of the year. Brad Brownell from Clemson is another one. There are some guys that just aren't good when the stakes are higher. Painter, Barnes, Brownell, three guys I look to fade at this time of the year. And so far, it seems like it's working out here as Purdue now deadlocked in a tie with 90 seconds left against Sparty.
High game. Michigan State on a 9-1 scoring run over the last 4 minutes. We'll see how they close things out with a minute 20 here remaining. And you mentioned how you like the smaller conferences. At the end of this hour, we'll get some of your best bets for what's on the slate coming up later on tonight. Also, in about, 15 minutes, we'll have Jerry Dulac join us of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette Steelers Insider talk through the fan reaction to Russell Wilson. You're not a believer. Is he? We shall see. And lots of NFL news still to discuss here, something that we didn't really get a chance to talk about in hour one, comes in the Big D, in the Dallas Cowboys, who did a whole lot of nada this week when it comes to free agency. I know they did get Eric Kendricks, but the big question, of course, is what are they going to do at running back, and addressing comments that owner Jerry Jones made earlier this offseason about this being a team that's going to be all in. Cowboys executive vice president Stephen Jones addressed those thoughts with the media and fans' concerns about their lack of action in free agency. Take a listen.
I mean, that's everybody certainly has that right. I mean, we've, you know, I know where the frustration is, the fact that we haven't had success in the playoffs to their satisfaction. Until we do that, then, you know, the criticism is certainly something that's going to be there. And we know that's going to be there, but we're going to stick with what we believe will ultimately get us a championship here for our fans. But, you know, we don't define all in as what you spend in free agency. It's keeping, you know, the core, keeping some of the great players in this league, like Dak Prescott, like CeeDee Lamb, like Micah Parsons, like Diggs. You know, that's what we define as all in. Is
you going to pop your collar like Stephen Jones had there?
Oh, if you want me to.
Interesting look.
He can probably get away with it easier than I can.
I don't know. I would like to see it. That's all I'm saying. But to actually go back to what he said, beautiful. Yes, that's what we like. See, fashion, ladies and gentlemen. Fashion.
Oh yeah, because people definitely think fashion when they look at me.
You don't look at all like Dracula with this move.
All right, so far people, I don't know if people remember the show that you had with Matt Brown, where I came on the first time and I had the black t-shirt and the gray coat, and you said I reminded you of number two from Austin Powers. Now I'm getting Dracula. So like, I don't know. Maybe it's just,
you're making a statement.
Bring out the Hollywood references.
You're making an impact on people. Okay. But to go back to what Stephen Jones actually had to say there regarding the Dallas Cowboys, the all in comment, that's something that Michael has said on this show a lot, is that when Jerry Jones made that comment, he meant it more about that you got to sign Micah Parsons, you got to sign CeeDee Lamb to these big contracts. I mean, Dak Prescott, obviously, with the cap hit that he's got right now, what's going to happen? Is he ultimately going to get that extension and make things easier from a money perspective for the Cowboys? I don't know. But my thing is, why make the comment to begin with? Because that's not what you said. You said that as a team, you're going to go all in, and that evokes a certain emotion from the fan base. Even Micah Parsons has talked about it on his podcast, what that means to him, and nothing has happened.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. And, you know, in the social media age and everything like that, instant reactions, like, people keep receipts on everything. So, yeah, you know, you can't send, you know, messaging that kind of confuses everybody or sort of goes against what you originally said. I will say this, though. I mean, the Cowboys were not in a great salary cap spot, you know, heading into free agency. And also, how much does this team really need? I mean, I get that you've struggled when you get to the playoffs, and maybe that's just a Dak Prescott thing more than anything. And like, nothing you can really do about that at this point in time. They can answer running back in the draft. They have, what, the 24th pick? So they could answer running back in the draft if they really want to, because they don't really have a ton of needs otherwise on this roster. So I understand what he's saying, too. I agree with what you said, that there's kind of the double talk thing. But also, like, you don't have to just spend money in free agency for the sake of spending money. Right. If you can actively get better and you have the cap space to do it, and you don't have to do it at the expense of restructuring something or losing somebody or something like that, then by all means, you go ahead and do it. But if you can't do it that way, don't spend money for the sake of spending money. Either make your internal players better or answer your needs through the draft. Do a better job with your, you know, player evaluation there.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, that's where they have to do it. Because they don't, because of the contracts that they inevitably are going to have to pay, they can't spend all this money in free agency. They just, like, they can't at this point. So the draft is a place where you can find running back talent beyond the first round. It's one of those unique positions that way. Like, you look at the top running backs in the NFL this past year in terms of yards, only Christian McCaffrey and Najee Harris were first round picks. Derrick Henry, Kyren Williams, James Cook, DeAndre Swift, Joe Mixon, David Montgomery, all second round or later picks. And Derrick Henry, I know a lot of people are wondering, hey, why wasn't he somebody that was under consideration? Well, he's getting $16 million for 2 years. They didn't even want to give Zach Moss $8 million for 2 years. So, of course, they're not going to spend double that for Derrick Henry.
Right. And look, I mean, despite what we saw in free agency with running backs, like, we all know the narrative surrounding running backs over the last few years, right? They have a short shelf life.
Yep.
You kind of want to get them on that rookie contract when they're cheap, use them and abuse them, turn them over, let somebody else worry about it. you know, even though we saw a lot of running backs go off the board on that first day of free agency, that was kind of the outlier, I think. And in fact, I'm still trying to process why that happened the way that it did. But yeah, I mean, you go get a guy, and look, I mean, Deuce Vaughn is, I mean, he was a very productive guy in college. I don't know if he'll be a productive guy in the NFL with how small he is, but like, that's a guy you can give 80 or 90 carries to. So if you go out there in the draft, second round, third round, as you mentioned, even if you want to try to get an impact running back, you could do so late in the first round, but you can get a guy that can give you 150 carries, 4.3, 4.4 yards a pop, and you're no worse for the wear, and you didn't spend a lot of money to do it.
Yeah, I mean, look at Isaiah Pacheco. I know he's the example that we keep talking about, right. But a seventh round pick, what the Dolphins have done with Achan and Mostert, you have a third round pick and an undrafted guy. Like, there are options out there. So I at least understand it. Just, I think it's hard as a fan, if you're a Cowboys fan and you hear those words all in and you have this idea of what that's going to be, and then you end up not seeing anything. They did also re-sign their long snapper, Trent Sieg, and corner Jordan Lewis, both to one-year deals, and they signed all-pro linebacker Eric Kendricks to a one-year deal, where he reportedly turned down a strong offer from the 49ers to reunite with Mike Zimmer with the Cowboys. And can I just say, if you're going to lose, I'd rather lose in the Super Bowl than the first round of the playoffs. That's all I'm going to say, Eric. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, at least you get there. Right. I don't think it makes it any easier, okay. But at least you get there.
No, but
are you okay now? Has enough time passed? Are you still wearing those scars from the Super Bowl?
I'm debating if and when I want to watch a replay. Like, that's the thing that's been going through my brain.
I have never watched Game 7 of the 2016 World
really?
Series again.
You just
and
can't
I never
do it.
Will. I can't do it. And that was 8 years ago.
Still lots more NFL that we're going to get to. Hopefully I won't tear up bringing up these memories. Thanks a lot for that, Adam. When we return here on the program, Jerry Dulac of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette is going to join us. We'll get into all things Steelers when we return.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Get an early start on your college hoops tournament betting with VSiN's full court bracket betting coverage this upcoming Sunday. We'll have a full show dedicated to opening lines for every game, and you'll have full access to the show, the betting splits, and picks with VSiN's free access through Selection Sunday. Just register at VSiN.com/champweek. The VSiN College Hoops experts, JVT, Jonathan Von Tobel, and Tim Murray, are analyzing every game. They'll discuss with bookmakers making the lines and do what they can to find that best early value for you. Don't wait for the lines to move. Start your bracket and tournament betting with VSiN's Betting the Bracket show this Sunday, beginning at 7 Eastern. Welcome back to the Lombardi Line. Adam Burke and Stormy Bonantoni with you as we continue talking all things NFL. It has been a busy week, especially out there in Steelers country. Joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line, Jerry Dulac, Steelers insider, Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Appreciate your time. Let's start with Russell Wilson. Where else could we start, especially since he spoke to everybody in the media today? What were some of your big takeaways from Russ's introduction?
They introduced him to the Pittsburgh media just a little while ago when, you know, Russell's a pro. He handles himself very well. And make no mistake, though, one of the reasons, or maybe the biggest reason, he chose the Steelers is Mike Tomlin. And he talked about, the great players, amazing players, to use his word, on defense, Cam Hayward, TJ Watt, Minka Fitzpatrick. And, he said all the right things, and you could feel Russell Wilson's energy. The energy he brings on the field is certainly was certainly evident today, and I think it's going to be an interesting kind of scenario how it unfolds with the quarterback situation. But I don't think there's any question. They didn't bring Russell Wilson in to lead the band at halftime. There was a reason they brought him in. And we're going to see how it is framed and how it evolves as they get into training camp and beyond.
Jerry, you mentioned that, it seems like Russell Wilson and kind of the ties with Mike Tomlin, the reason why he's there in Pittsburgh. But what do you think about his fit in the new Arthur Smith offense, first year offensive coordinator there in Pittsburgh? Do you feel like he's a good fit for that system?
Well, Russell Wilson, let's face it, he's has been one of the top dual threat quarterbacks in the league. I think when you get a player like Russell Wilson, the guy, hey, he threw 26 touchdowns last year. Kenny Pickett has thrown 13 in 2 years. So anytime you can get a quarterback who can produce points and can throw touchdowns, something that's been missing from this offense with Kenny Pickett, I expect it to be a good fit. I mean, first of all, Arthur Smith's offense typically is what we saw in Tennessee when he was solely the coordinator, was to run the football with Derrick Henry. The Steelers have two running backs. I'm not going to sit here and tell you they're going to be 60-40, 70-30 running the football, but that's going to be their objective, as it really was last year as well. It'll be even more so with Arthur Smith. So to me, when you have two running backs that they feel can be significant contributors, to me, that can only help Russell Wilson. I don't see it being a problem at all. You know, I go back 2 years ago when Ben Roethlisberger retired. At the time, I thought the best fit for this offense, if the Steelers were going to go outside, now they signed Mitch Trubisky because they wanted a mobile, athletic quarterback. At the time, I thought the best fit for this offense was Russell Wilson. And here, 2 years later, here he is. I don't see any issues with how he might fit in with Arthur Smith. I think it can only be a good fit.
You mentioned his presence at the podium and the pro and the veteran that he is, but obviously outwardly there's been some concerns about him being a little bit of a polarizing figure and the things that he asked for when he went to the Broncos. And Mike Tomlin is about as no-nonsense as it gets with a coach. What do you think of that match?
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that it's the reason it's one of the main reasons he wanted to come here was Mike Tomlin. We heard Patrick Queen as well earlier today when they asked him, you know, why do you want to come here? Mike Tomlin was in the room. He nodded right toward him. So, yeah, I don't see that being an issue. When you have guys like Cam Hayward and T.J. Watt and Minka Fitzpatrick, you know, some of the biggest stars in the league, proven veteran players, no-nonsense guys. I don't think Russell Wilson is going to – I don't think any of that – look, I can't sit here and guarantee anything, but I just can't see any of that being a big factor here. Now, we'll find out. But I think if he was going to go somewhere to an organization and to a team and to a locker room, where he could kind of blend in and not, look, he'll be a little bit of an alpha dog. There's no question about it. The biggest alpha dog of all here is Cam Hayward. But I see him, I don't see that being a problem, and I see him fitting in. And we'll see what happens. It's only for a one-year deal. I don't know what's going to happen after that. But if I had to bet, I would say I don't see it being a problem.
Jerry, as we take a look at the NFL draft here, the odds over at DraftKings Sportsbook, the position of the first player drafted by Pittsburgh, they do hold the 20th overall pick in the first round. Offensive lineman -120, wide receiver +200, and of course they just traded Deontay Johnson, corner +370, and then defensive line or edge 8-1, so a little bit of a longer shot there. Do you have a feel of what the Steelers may be prioritizing here for the draft next month in terms of their first round pick?
Well, I can tell you when you mentioned defensive line, it won't be edge. They have two guys. They would be looking more to have a three technique, you know, someone like along the lines of a Cam Hayward to step in for him. The fact that they released Deontay Johnson now elevates the possibility of wide receiver on day one. I thought and I expected one to go a wide receiver by day two anyhow. And now releasing Deontay Johnson elevates that as much. Center, they don't have one. They released Mason Cole. They have at best a backup in Nate Herbig. To me, I wouldn't be surprised to see them get a veteran here in free agency to be a backup, but I don't think there's any question they are going to look for a center in the draft. There's a couple, three that they like, and maybe they feel they can get one of those guys on round two. I wouldn't sit here and tell you they'll turn their back on a tackle, But I think the defensive line is in play. To me, it's the number one position they've needed for 2 years. They need to find the next Cam Hayward. They took a step in that direction last year with Keanu Benton, but they need to find a stud, a Pro Bowl type player. There's not a lot of them, though, in the draft. There's a couple of them. But I would say those four positions that they said, and I would not rule out corner, except I do not believe that will be in the first round. But I think of those four positions you stated, more than likely that's where it's going to come from.
Steelers insider Jerry Dulac joining us on the Lombardi Line's Progressive Guest Line. A very competitive division, to say the least. Where do you think, when all is said and done with the additions and tweaks that the Steelers team has made, that they will stack up within the division?
I don't think, I think based on what I've seen, the Patrick Queen signing was the biggest one. They, their sense of urgency and immediacy to win a playoff game and get this thing in the postseason headed in the right direction. I think they're, I thought they were 10-7 last year, and that's what they were. And I think they are making this, they are making the steps to be better. And, you know, where that stacks in the division, I could see them being a second place team until the Cleveland Browns prove to me they can do it year in and year out, which they never do. I'm not going to sit here and bless them as an up and coming team. So I think the Steelers have a good chance to be the second place team. Who knows? Maybe they can challenge for the division.
Jerry, thank you so much for your time today. We so appreciate you.
Yeah, good talking with you guys.
Thanks, Jerry.
Jerry Dulac of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Again, Russell Wilson officially having his introduction to the media today in Pittsburgh. Same for Patrick Queen. And where things sit right now in the AFC North, odds-wise, the Baltimore Ravens are your favorite at plus 115. No movement there for them despite adding Derrick Henry, but they were already the favorite and one of the shorter shots in the AFC as well as the Super Bowl. The Bengals plus 165, Cleveland plus 550, and the Steelers the longest shot at plus 950, but that has come down from 12-1 prior to the Russ acquisition.
Yeah, I don't know if we've ever talked about it on any of our shows here, but Mike Tomlin has never had a losing season.
Rumor
I'm not
has
sure
it.
That it's ever been mentioned here.
Add that to the tally board. We're trying to keep track of how many times that's mentioned between now and the start of this season. When, especially like with win totals coming right out, you have to.
It's a phenomenal drinking game. Drink responsibly, everybody. but it is St. Patrick's Day weekend, so, you know.
Yeah, now's the time.
Might as well start it early a little bit. Look, I mean, to me, this defense is really good and they continue to be good, but offensively, they got to figure something out. I mean, Russ is not like overcome a lot of problems on a roster, Russ, anymore. Like, I don't know if it's the offensive line, wide receiver, but they definitely need to do some more things here before the season starts for sure.
There's a lot of talented wide receivers in the draft, though. Like Jerry was talking about that potentially being a position that they look for, although they have other needs, clearly, right, as well. But I don't know. I'm more optimistic about the Steelers, I feel like, than most. We shall see. We'll be back with more Lombardi Line after quick timeout.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Not a registered VSiN.com user yet? Well, now's the time. You can create a free account where you'll get VSiN Pro access to everything we do through the NCAA tournament week leading up to Selection Sunday. Sign up today, VSiN.com/champweek. That'll get you instant VSiN Pro access. That includes our daily best bets with the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand, betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game, betting systems, premium analysis, 24/7 video access, plus our all-new NCAA tournament betting primer. Don't miss out on this, though. It's free. VSiN Pro access. Help you bet the tournament smarter. VSiN.com/champweek. That's VSIN.com/champweek. Adam Burke and Stormy Bonantoni with you here on the Lombardi Line. And you love when a 10.5-point favorite is down 20 and you bet them in a money line parlay just to have that as your, you know, solid block, you know, to throw it in. I hate everything right now.
Your anchor leg. Yeah. Rick Barnes, this time of the year, conference tournament, NCAA tournament. This is just what he does and who he is. So, and look, I mean, again, there are some teams that have high seeds that aren't going to go out there. They don't want to play three games in 3 days at this point in time. It's just not something that they're interested in. So I kind of get it from that respect, but not a good look for the Vols here for sure.
Cameron Matthews can't miss. He's perfect from the floor. Just added to the list. Anyways, also Purdue did end up handling business. By the way, they won but did not cover, 67-62, the final there. And we'll give some college basketball best bets for the rest of the day coming up in the final block of the program. But here we have a little treat, ladies and gentlemen, because we have our resident Major League Baseball expert on the desk with us. We're going to look ahead to a little MLB futures action. You mentioned earlier opening day just around the corner. We're 5 days out from the Seoul series, the Padres and Dodgers going head to head in South Korea. We have a lineup for that game right now, by the way. So our first regular season line is available, but less than 2 weeks away from the opening day in earnest, where you will have all 30 teams in action. You getting excited?
I am. Yeah. I mean, I'm starting to work through all my preseason prep work. I got 16 team previews posted over at vsin.com. And again, as Stormy mentioned, it's free this weekend. So head on over there, check those out, get your fill of reading about the American League. Look, I would say at first glance for Wednesday's game, I think the line's a little bit high. With the Dodgers and the Padres, Dodgers about a -200 favorite. I think it's a little bit high. Definitely, you know, don't go overboard here on this game. It's in a place where none of these guys have ever really played a Major League Baseball game before. So, you know, there is that. But yeah, you know, just kind of working my way through and, you know, previewing the teams for the season, kind of talking about the things that I key in terms of making season win total bets, in terms of looking for futures, you know, award markets, stuff like that. For me, I'm more of a day-by-day better than playing a lot of the futures and season-long props, but it helps me organize my thoughts to get those previews out, and hopefully it helps you with the start of your baseball handicapping as well.
Yeah, and you were also helping people out, giving tips and tricks for how to approach spring training, betting, so there's all that good stuff up at vsin.com right now. But let's get to some of your angles and how you were approaching a few of these futures markets, and maybe start with season win totals. First of all, like you said, like giving out some tips as to how you approach certain markets for the teams that you did target for season win total overs. What were you looking for?
Yeah, so there are a few key elements that I need for a team. If I'm going to play an over or if I'm looking to play an under, depth is a huge one, right? I mean, Major League Baseball, the individualized nature of the sport, hitter versus pitcher, the gap between players can be quite significant. And I'm not saying it's not the same in other sports, but in baseball, to me, I think it's different because you've got the hitter versus pitcher, and that's the fundamental element of the game. So, you know, if you get a guy who gets hurt and his replacement is, you know, two or three wins below him, something like that, in terms of wins above replacement player, that's a really huge drop off. So I look at depth. I do not want to bet an over with a top heavy team. And, you know, guy strains his oblique, he's out 6 weeks. All of a sudden, what does that team do for that 6 week period? Depth is a big one, not just on the major league roster, but also on the 40 man with the prospect list, stuff like that. I want to know where these teams are going to be as the season plays out, right? Because if it's a top heavy team that isn't expected to be very good, some of those guys at the top may be traded at the trade deadline. I do not want to be locked into an over with a team like that. So that's a really important thing. Also, I'm a numbers guy, I'm an analytics guy. If it's an organization that is really numbers savvy, very data driven, I'm giving them the benefit of the doubt. Why? Because they're probably going to be better at adjusting on the fly, right? A lot of guys, a lot of pitchers make individual adjustments in the offseason. It's much harder to do those things over the course of the season. One of the things that made Arizona so successful last year, their pitching coach, Brent Strom, made individual adjustments with the pitching staff that really elevated those guys. And then they kind of got hot at the right time, wind up going to the World Series. So I look for data driven organizations, and I look for depth. Those are two of the biggest things I'm looking at in terms of the win total markets.
I know you'll have your full National League preview coming out soon, but starting with the American League and all of the research and data that you've put together so far, which season win totals, whether it's an over or an under, have you targeted so far?
So what I really do like for an over, and they are locked in a tough division, and I realize that, I mean, they kind of have basically a major league starting rotation on the injured list, but I really like the Tampa Bay Rays this season. I think they are underpriced. I think they're undervalued. Their season win total, 84.5. I did pick against them last year, full disclosure, and they wound up winning 99 games despite losing Shane McClanahan, Jeffrey Springs, and Drew Rasmussen throughout the course of the season. Plus, they lost Wander Franco, who will probably never play a Major League Baseball game again, nor should he, based on everything that's happened with him. But this is a really, really elite offense, a top five offensive group. They always figure it out on the pitching side. Data-driven organization, excellent manager in Kevin Cash, arguably the best manager in baseball. I know he took a lot of flack for the Blake Snell thing in the World Series in 2020. Whatever it is, what it is, that's how they got to that point. But I really like their pitching depth. I like their bullpen a lot. But this offense, really good, puts up great numbers despite playing in a bad hitter's ballpark at Tropicana Field. I get it. The East looks pretty strong overall, but the Gerrit Cole thing definitely helps my thoughts on this position. And again, I just think it's Baltimore and Tampa Bay in the East for me this year. So I like the Rays over 84.5 wins.
Yeah, 84.5, that number, plus 130 for them to make the playoffs. You also, like, so talk to me about the A's here. So, I mean, lowest win total in the league, I believe, yes, this year. They're expected to be terrible, but not that terrible.
Yeah, I don't think they'll be that terrible. I mean, look, it is very, very hard to lose 105 games. Like, it is extremely hard. There's an old adage in baseball. It's you win 60, you lose 60, and the other 40 determine the fate of your season. Maybe the A's don't win 60, but I saw a lot of good things from this team late in the year. I think Zach Gelof is a really, really good player. Ryan Noda, Brent Rooker, two pretty good bats in the lineup. I think Seth Brown is a guy that could bounce back a little bit. But it didn't get a lot of attention because they're the A's and they suck and they're being sold and no one goes to their games and all of that. But throughout the course of the season, their pitching staff actually got better in terms of home run avoidance, specifically a guy like Luis Medina, who unfortunately sprained his MCL, so he's going to be out for a little while. But I still think a guy like J.P. Sears can be an effective major league starter. They bring in Alex Wood and Ross Stripling, two highly motivated guys that are hoping to, you know, find their way onto a playoff contender, get into a pennant race, something like that. I like their depth. I think their bullpen has some exciting young arms. But again, it's just really, really hard to lose 105 games. And I understand they lost 110 last year. I get that. But last year, they started really bad. I think they were 23-46 to start the season. I'd expect them to be a bit better than that, not be chasing this number throughout the course of the year. And honestly, now they kind of know their fate, right? Last year, they sort of went into it going, oh, we don't really know if we're going to go to Vegas or not. We don't really know what's going to happen. Now they know. They're going to Vegas, and they're going to be squatting in some other ballpark until the ballpark's done here. So I think that kind of takes away a little bit of the uncertainty for them, allows them to focus on baseball. I think them, they may still lose 100 games, but I think they'll avoid losing 105.
It's a minus 20,000 bet for them to miss the playoffs, if that gives you a little glimpse into.
If you got 20 grand laying around to win 100 bucks, why not?
How about any, like, of the divisions, any winners that you liked? I know some of these futures, to your point right now, maybe better in-season bets than preseason, but some that stand out?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there will be a lot of times, World Series, division markets, pennant markets, whatever the case may be, yes, no playoffs. You will, with some of these teams, get better numbers throughout the course of the season, to be sure. I mean, you think about the Braves, the year they won the World Series, they went into August at 60-1 to win the World Series because they had played so pedestrian up until that point, caught a really weak part of the schedule, dominated their way through it, left the month of August in first place, and then, of course, rode it on into winning the World Series.
Yet the last 2 years, they've been the winningest team in baseball, and they haven't been able to win the World Series.
Right, which is, so, I mean, I call the MLB playoffs the tournament of variance because that's just kind of what it is. It's very hard to kind of pinpoint. There's a lot of volatility to it because of the nature of baseball, because of the nature of the series, you know, when you have starting pitchers available, stuff like that. But as far as some division thoughts, real quick here. So, in the American League Central, and again, I'm a Cleveland guy, full disclosure, whatever, but this pitching staff could be really, really good. If this lineup is anything close to league average, I think the Guardians at plus 350 have a very real shot of winning this division because their ceiling is so high with that pitching staff that they have, and their floor is high as well because, you know, the pitching staff is good. They're probably the best defensive team in all of baseball. But I also like the Tigers at plus 350. I think that this is a team that could really step up. They've got some young guys in the lineup. They're starting to mature into their prime. Colt Keith is a legit hitter, maybe not a great defender, but a legitimate hitter. And their rotation looks a little bit better as well. Plus, AJ Hinch, former Astros manager, doing some good things with, you know, with the guys on this team. I think the Tigers and the Guardians, both at plus 350, are very live to win this division, where I don't think the Twins deserve to be an odds-on favorite.
Yeah, Twins minus 115 right now to win the AL Central. Great stuff. And, of course, Adam will be joining us weekly throughout the entire summer because we are in the dog days of NFL, and we are going to need your expertise on daily baseball. So appreciate that as always. When we come back, we're going to wrap things up here on the Lombardi Line, turning back to college hoops. Best bets for the rest of the slate coming up today.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
This week on DraftKings Sportsbook, new customers can bet just $5 and pocket $150 in bonus bets instantly. All you need to do is download the app and use the promo code VSIN when you sign up. That's V-S-I-N. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Also, great message from our friends at Total Wine and More. With so many bottles to choose from, it's easy to find your favorite at the lowest prices for over 30 years. Find what you love and love what you find at Total Wine and More. But please drink responsibly. Must be 21. We're wrapping things up here on the Lombardi Line alongside Adam Burke, Stormy Bonantoni with you live from Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. The sportsbook is popping for all things Champ Week. We got 36 games on the slate today. One final already in the books. Purdue beat Michigan State 67-62. Michigan State covers the 7.5. Total stays under, but that was a little bit of a sweat there for a moment. And South Carolina, they're a 7.5 point favorite. They're up around 30 points right now on East Carolina. Tennessee was a 10.5 point favorite. They're down 20 to Mississippi State with time winding down. We're under 8 at that point. And Sam Houston, a favorite against UTEP, they are trailing as well with 20 or so seconds to go. So they call it madness for a reason, Adam.
They do, and I'm really interested to see what happens tonight. I don't have a play on it, but this Temple and Charlotte game in the AAC quarterfinals down in Fort Worth. Temple, of course, much talked about last week for some unusual wagering activity, not only in that game, but also for a few games prior to that. And then now all of a sudden, I don't know, maybe they want to avoid any kind of penalty and just want to go out there and win every game. So we'll see what happens if they can keep that winning streak going tonight. But the Temple Owls, interesting tonight against the Charlotte team laying 6 down there in Fort Worth.
Well, speaking to some of these like lower conference games, that's kind of become your specialty over the years, honing in on these smaller conferences, getting away from the Power Fives. What else today are you looking at? We got some interesting ones later on.
Yeah, I mean, for me, so I like looking at the small conferences. I think there's more line value in them. Also, I don't really care if I win money on NC Central or Baylor. Like, it all spends the same.
Cash
it all goes
the
in
same.
The account the same. So I just feel like there's more edges to be had in those smaller conferences. And I do like a game here tonight, as you mentioned, which is actually NC Central out of the MEAC. And I wrote this conference tournament preview over at vsin.com. NC Central is the team that I picked to win this conference tournament, kind of because I like their matchup against South Carolina State here in the semifinals. But it turns out Delaware State beat South Carolina State yesterday. So you got a rested NC Central team. They played a couple of days ago, whereas Delaware State played yesterday. And NC Central, just to me, their numbers are better across the board. They're a better offensive and defensive team. They're a better shooting team as well. Delaware State, 331st in the nation in two-point percentage offense, and they only shoot at 3 about 26% of the time. And NC Central's a really good team in terms of defending the 3. So I just don't really see how Delaware State scores in this game. And in fact, Delaware State was 11 of 28 from 3 in one of their games against NC Central earlier this year. NC Central still won by 12. So this team does not make threes. They made 11 in a game and still lost by 12. So I like NC Central in this matchup here tonight, where I think the turnaround for a depth-shy Delaware State roster is just too much to overcome.
You also showed your hand a little bit because you said, I don't care if I'm cashing on NC Central or Baylor. Doesn't matter. So I have a feeling that Baylor-Iowa State might be the next game that you're targeting today.
It is, actually. How about that? You know, I didn't even think about that in real time, but now that you mention it, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I...
Also, the rundown might have given me a hint as to what you like today. So there's that.
Maybe subconsciously, I know what I'm doing here, even though I don't know if that's really
being
portrayed through the show. But yeah, I mean, I like Baylor tonight. I mean, Iowa State and the Big 12 in general, you know, a very home dominant conference. Iowa State was remarkable at home. A lot of Hilton magic for them this season. On the road, not so much. And Baylor's a team that shoots the 3 very, very well. What I like about Baylor is, you know, when they played Iowa State, they had 20 turnovers in a game played to 65 possessions. And they still scored 70 points and wound up winning, not comfortably, but they still wound up winning the game. So I like Baylor here in this one. The Cyclones, you know, as good as their metrics look defensively, a lot of that has to do with how many turnovers they force. But offensively, they were in the bottom half of the Big 12 and really in the bottom third of the Big 12 this season. So I think Baylor here, maybe a little bit more motivated to win this conference tournament as well. I think in a coin flip game where Baylor's getting a point, you could take plus one, you could take the money line, but I like the Bears tonight.
That game, the Big 12 semifinal, tipping off at 6:30 Pacific, 9:30 Eastern on ESPN. So this is a smaller conference. It's a group of five league, but one that is predicted to get a ton of teams in the tournament this year. It's been a really good basketball league, and that's the Mountain West Conference that's being played out here in Las Vegas at the Thomas and Mack Center. Both games today, I think, have potential to be two of the best games of the day. You've got short spreads, teams that split home and home in the regular season, in San Diego State taking on Utah State, and CSU against New Mexico. The first game of the day, the Aztecs against the Aggies. Both of their games yesterday went to overtime. Utah State was taken to the wire against Fresno State, ended up pulling away there in overtime. San Diego State UNLV was a toughly contested game too. I thought for a second we were about to go to double OT because that young freak of nature, freshman Thomas Jr. for the Rebels, almost hit a late three to tie it and extend things again. But we've seen this number go up in San Diego State's favor. So Utah State is number 18 ranked team in the country. They're the top seed in the tournament, having won the Mountain West this year, but they're getting 4.5 in this game now against SDSU.
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of things in play here. I mean, the first is Utah State ranks 303rd in two-point percentage defense. So I think the expectation here is that San Diego State will have some success inside the arc. What will determine this game, and the reason why I stayed off of it, is what happens outside the arc. What does San Diego State do in terms of shooting in this game? Because they've taken a three on almost 38% of their shots, but they're only shooting 31.5% from three. And Utah State, a top five defensive team in terms of guarding the three-point line. San Diego State is 22nd in guarding the three-point line as well. So I kind of lean under a little bit in this game. I think it'd be difficult for both teams to shoot well from the outside. But yeah, we are seeing a line movement here on San Diego State, and a pretty significant one at that, with this one moving out to as high as -5 now in the market. Now, of course, keep in mind, you know, it is conference tournament time. Typically in college basketball, really sharp, influential bettors shape the market. In conference tournaments, and specifically when we get to the NCAA tournament, the sheer volume of money on these games can induce some public-driven line moves. I don't know which one this is, but you know, it is interesting to see San Diego State definitely taking the lion's share of the money here this afternoon.
And I mean, I am an Aztec, so I'm a homer in this spot. I like them at 3.5. I don't like them at 5. Like, this is just a team that I can't trust as far as I can throw them type of a feeling, right? And they shot about as well in the first half yesterday as Tennessee did today. So, you know, not a ton of faith in them ever offensively, but defensively, they're a great team. And I think a lot of what you said about the total makes sense. They're usually a square under team. The game going to overtime is the only reason that it ended up pushing over yesterday. The thing that I like SDSU about with Utah State, in addition to like that mid-range being good for them against the Utah State defense, is just that like Utah State doesn't have a ton of depth. Right. And Great Osabor, who's like their best player by far, he did not leave the court yesterday, and he was getting banged like a lot, double teamed, physical defense. I feel like San Diego State plays a good physical game, and I just think that they have a little bit more depth that would push them over the edge in this spot. And the other game, again, 7 seed CSU and 6 seed New Mexico, but this isn't your average 6-7 seed type of a semifinal either. CSU handled nationally ranked Nevada despite not calling any plays. I loved this from Nico Medved after the game. He's just saying like, you know, I just told them, go out there and go play. You know, you guys have been doing well, and it came together in a big way. They had a double-digit lead most of that game. And then New Mexico topping Boise State, you wonder what that could do for their NCAA tournament hopes as well.
That's an excellent point you made about Utah State with Great Osabor and then also Darius Brown. I mean, 44 and 45 minutes respectively. Yeah. That's a big workload at this time of the year, you know, especially to go out there and then play another very high-octane game. So, yeah, you know, but the Colorado State one I think is really interesting, especially because, you know, New Mexico is a team. They were a preseason darling. They got a ton of love. You don't typically see Mountain West teams get a lot of interest to win a national championship, but New Mexico did with the roster that they have here. And in some respects, they've met expectations, and others they have not. I mean, they finished the regular season 10-8 here in the Mountain West, which is a really good conference. But, you know, New Mexico is a team that, you know, you would kind of expect more from them at times. We'll see if that shows up here tonight. But these are two well-balanced teams, both good on offense, both good on defense. New Mexico does force a few more turnovers. But I think the interesting thing here is, you know, again, these are all neutral site games at this time in the conference tournaments. So teams that are more reliant on the three than others kind of concern me. This is a situation, New Mexico, only a 30% three-point rate, Colorado State, 38.3%. So Colorado State has to shoot more threes, but they got a game under their belts at Thomas and Mack. They play there every year against UNLV anyway. I don't know. I kind of like Colorado State here a little bit, yeah. I think, to pull the upset, especially if Medved has that much trust in his offense to go out there and get it done.
Yeah, that was my lean as well. Colorado State getting three in this spot, plus 124 on the money line. And of course, it's as we're leaving the show, we're done for the day. Apparently, Kenny Pickett is headed to the Eagles. Okay. Huh? Breaking news, ladies and gentlemen, as we were just talking with Jerry Dulac a little bit earlier on the program about Russell Wilson going to the Steelers, that information would have been useful a half hour ago. Neither here nor there. I'm sure that our good friends over there, Patrick Maher and the Sharp Money crew, will pick that up for you next, as well as giving you more conference tournament best bets throughout the day. If you're watching on DraftKings Network, it'll be Pablo Torre. Thanks for hanging out with us. Breaking news in the last 30 seconds of a program. Great. Thanks, Adam. Appreciate you, buddy.
It was fun.